Well, we are Steve and Annette Economides, and we're glad to be here with you this morning. And I'm hoping that you're not coming into this session afraid. Because whenever you go to a meeting where they talk about money, usually they're trying to sell you something or make you feel guilty or get money out of you. And that's not what we're doing today. We want to empower you, encourage you, and give you tools to help you reach your goals. There is always hope, no matter what your need. We, for years, ran a financial coaching ministry at our church. The church was about 7,000 people, and we heard incredible stories that would rip your heart out. We heard stories of cars being repossessed. If that's where you've been, there's hope. We've heard stories of homes being foreclosed. If that's where you are, there's hope. We've had people come to us when their utilities were turned off and wanted money from the church. There's still hope. Creditors calling at all hours of the day, threatening, calling, telling one woman, if you're still with that bum, you're an idiot. I mean, incredibly derisive, demotivating, discouraging. There's still hope. We had one widow who missed a credit card payment, and her credit card interest rate jumped from something like 8 or 9% to 30%. There's still hope. There's a simple tool we give you. People are struggling with overdue bills. All of these things create emotion in us. And what we're going to hopefully do today is change that emotion to hope and an attitude that nothing is impossible when you do things God's way.
The truth is that finances in our country today are the number one cause of divorce. So if you're struggling financially, you are not alone. And I think it's especially near and dear to a homeschooler's heart because there's many homeschoolers that are trying to live on one income right now. And you may think that's impossible, and we say, no, it's not. You can do it. And we're going to show you how today.
Okay. A Christmas Carol. Jacob Marley is up in his room, and he's bolted the doors because he's kind of afraid, and he hears the chains coming up the stairs. And in comes, I'm sorry, not Jacob Marley, Ebenezer Scrooge is in the room, and he hears Marley walking up the stairs, and Marley's got chains with cash boxes. Now, that was designed to depict a life of selfishness, and that he had... Can you hear me?
Keep talking.
Okay, that he had basically hoarded money for himself and spent it on himself and just enjoyed everything and never given to anybody. But a lot of us, even our government, is hauling this long chain of debt behind us. And it's basically because of either a lack of training, a lack of knowledge, or a lack of tools to deal with money in a way that actually produces wealth and produces a profit rather than debt. And what we're wanting to do today is help you understand that money is not a nightmare. It doesn't have to be a stressor. It actually is designed by God to give us freedom and enjoyment so that we can live all the days of our lives enjoying His blessing. It's the Lord who gives you the power to make wealth, and He adds no sorrow to it. And that's where we want to go.
So let me talk a little bit about our history. Basically, Steve and I both grew up in your average middle-class homes. My dad was an engineer, and he was out of work for several years. And we shopped at the JCPenney's bargain basement. And we cooked from scratch. Mom cooked meals at home. And surprisingly, Steve's mom also shopped at the JCPenney's bargain basement. They didn't do too many garage sales, but it was just the average middle-class home.
My dad was a commercial photographer, so I used to go to work with him, and he gave me jobs to do, cleaning things, making prints. I used to be a delivery boy in downtown Chicago. One day I went into one of the dark rooms, and he had this big wooden barrel full of something. I thought it was beer, and I drank it, and it tasted terrible. It was a chemical. I wasn't too smart, but it kind of explains my mental condition now. But one thing he did do, he taught me to work, and he taught me to save. And basically, he had a 401 dad. Basically, any money I put in the bank, he matched. But he didn't teach me how to spend wisely or how to be careful with money. And that's a whole other story. But basically, we grew up kind of the same. And that in itself is one area where it really helps marriages when you marry someone on your same financial level. And we've seen couples where they haven't, and it causes great distress, but it's not insurmountable. This is amazing. This is all God's doing. We were getting ready to get married. We met at our church. Annette was just graduating high school, and I was a leader in the college group playing guitar. And after a few years, we finally decided that I should ask her to marry me. And,
oh, stop!
And her parents said, "What have you been waiting for? We knew this was going to happen." And we went through a marriage prep class. In the marriage prep class, one of the weeks dealt with finances and setting up a budget. Now, I never lived on a budget. I didn't know what a budget was. I never had any debt. I went to school on scholarship. I didn't have any school loans. I never had a credit card. But we learned that there was a tool out there that could help you kind of see what your income was, put it into categories, and then manage it so that you'd never overspend. And we looked at each other and go, "Wow, this is interesting. I think we could do this." And we started doing it. It was Larry Burkett's book, Your Finances in Changing Times. We set it up, and we've taken that system, and I'll tell you, I met with Larry once for lunch and love the guy, and really sad that he's with the Lord now because we need him more than ever. But we've taken his tool and made it way better.
And we're humble, too.
But here's what it helped us accomplish. When we were first married, I was earning $6.50 an hour as a paste-up artist at a printing company. Annette wanted to stay home. My dad told me I should work two jobs, Annette should work one job, and we should save every penny we earn so that we could buy a house within 3 years. Okay, that was the goal, 3 years. We didn't listen to him. I worked one job. I did a little bit of freelance work, but it wasn't high finance, I guarantee you that. 3 years, almost to the day, we put 15% down on a four-bedroom fixer-upper repo. We paid that house off in 9 years on an average income of $33,000. At the same time, we bought two cars and had five kids.
Okay, so
God's principles work, and having a money management tool helps you survive even on a low income and do phenomenal things.
You want to say
something? Yeah. I wrote this in one of our press releases. Steve and Annette are living the American dream in a very un-American way without debt. And it can be done. It can be done. We didn't use credit cards. We borrowed money to pay off our house, to buy the house, and then paid that off rapidly. And it's really incredible. What we're going to share is the stewardship tool we use. We're going to give you tips to manage your money better. And we're going to show you how paying attention to the little things really matters. There's a scripture verse in Proverbs 27 that says, "Know well the condition of your flocks." How many of you ever read the book, Yancey? A Shepherd Writes on Psalm 23? Okay, I can't remember. Keller, that's right. And he talks about how the shepherd every day would go out and touch every sheep. The sheep were his business. They were his way of making money. And every day he familiarized himself with the sheep and checked their condition. And if this one was a little bloated, he dealt with it. If this one had burrs, he dealt with it. If this one was limping, he dealt with it. He knew the condition of his flock. Your flock is not only your children, but it's also your finances. It requires attention. And we're going to show you how we do it. And it's not overwhelming.
Okay.
So here's what we got. If you came in, you have what's called an income-outgo sheet. This is what when we would coach people, this would be the starting point for determining how to live on a budget.
And if you don't have one, Carol's back by the door.
That's Mom.
It's my mom, and you can go get one from her if you don't have a sheet. But we're going to be referring to that several times this morning, so you may want to run back there and get a sheet if you don't have one.
Now, we all have tools. You know, guys, we go to Home Depot, we have the tools, you know, the more power, the better. Women, you've got tools, too. You have tools for building your curriculum, for teaching your kids, for working in the kitchen. You have a job, you've got tools for doing your job. Everybody's got tools, and I guarantee you the first time you use a tool, it's not going to be the easiest or the best. Would you agree? Yeah. Tools, learning to use tools take time, and the same thing happens with budgets, especially if you think budget is a four-letter word. You'd probably be bad at math, too. But budget is not a four-letter word. Budget is my friend. You can call it a spending plan, whatever. There are different kinds of budgets out there, though. And I just want to describe a few.
Well, and there's no one budget that will fit every family. So we've had people come up to us and say, give me the budget. It doesn't exist. Because the best budget that's out there is the one you create with your priorities. So we talked to one person one time, and they said, boy, they really wanted to go to Disneyland every year, and they were willing to eat beans and rice to get there. I said, go for it. Okay? Because if you're going to have a budget and it's going to work for your family, it has to be you. It has to be your priorities.
But
we're going to make some suggestions on priorities you should have, but ultimately the decision is yours.
We started off with a cash envelope budget. Now, a lot of you have heard of that. You know, we took our paycheck and we divided it up into like five or six different categories. And it worked so well on $6.50 an hour, $883 a month take home, that within a few months we had more than $2,000 sitting in our house. And we got worried. Because that was a lot of money. You know, and so what we did is we changed it from being in envelopes. We put it all in the bank and we made individual sheets to track the money in each account. And that's what we've used to this day. And we'll describe that a little more later. But those are two different systems, cash envelopes, tracking it on paper. I never was an accountant, so I didn't use ledgers, although I love Excel now. And I could probably build one in Excel. And that's another way some people do it. There are two awesome online tools that are free. One is Mint.com. It's free. You can access it through our website if you just look up Mint and we have a link to it. And the other one is Mvelopes.com. The difference between the two of them is that when you save money in advance of expenses with Mint, let's say you say you're going to spend $100 a month on clothing, and you don't spend $100 this month, you only spend $50, you're negative $50 in that account. Now, in my book, I've got $50 to spend if it was a cash envelope. With Mvelopes.com, it tells you you're positive 50. That's the biggest difference. They're both good tools. But a tool is absolutely no good if it stays in the toolbox. Okay? You've got to use it. Here's why budgets don't work. You have unrealistic numbers. Honey, we're going to save money so we can go to the Bahamas, so we're going to spend $50 a month on food. Can you do it? Oh, by the way, I'm not going to change my budget for the boat. You know, I mean, it's unrealistic. And sometimes it's one person kind of pushing their agenda on the other. It works best when the two of you agree. And that's how we've done our budget for 31 years. If you do a budget where at the end of every month you say, okay, what did we spend? Oh, boy, we really blew it in our recreation this month. Oh, better do better next month. That's kind of like after-the-fact budgeting. And we have a system that's proactive. We save in advance. And then, you know what we do differently is we look at what we have and decide what we're going to do, rather than decide what we're going to do and hope that we have enough. See the difference? And we'll talk about that when we talk about vacations. Another reason budgets don't work, at least we hear, I don't agree with it, is that, well, you know, I live on commission. I have an inconsistent income. I couldn't possibly live on a budget. You are the one who needs to live on the budget the most. And we have lived on commission, and you try living as an author when you get paid once every couple of years. We make our paychecks last. And we had our literary agent say, you know, I hope you can handle this because, you know, you're going to get this royalty statement or book advance here, but you aren't going to get anything until you turn in your manuscript a year from now. Are you guys going to be okay? We made that money last for 3 years. The system helps you manage. And so if you live on commission or you have a fluctuating income, we aren't going to go into those details here, but come talk to us. We'll show you how we do it. It's not that difficult. Why will our system work? And it's because we save in advance. I want to tell you a story. There was this couple that we were coaching. This was probably about 20 years ago. So the numbers have changed, but they had five kids, one on the way. He was working as an electrical engineer tech, earning about $22,000 a year. They were struggling. They qualified for welfare. They didn't know it. We worked with them, got their finances balanced to the point where they paid off some debt, and it came to one night when we finished working through their budget, and they had $10 left for recreation. And we looked at the wife, and we said, Carol, can you make it for 2 weeks with $10? She says, Now watch this. This is a woman's heart, okay? She's been living in reckless spending and fear for years. Now she sees a plan. She says, if I know that everything else is covered, that the car is covered, that I'm going to have gas for the car, that the kids' schooling is covered, that I've got money for clothes accumulating, I'm saving for Christmas, I've got money for food. If I know all that stuff is covered, I can absolutely live on $10 for 2 weeks and recreation because I'm having peace over here. And you know what they did? It was the coolest thing. They said, well, we can't really go out to dinner. So what they did is they put the kids to bed early. Bill ran out and bought Chinese food, and she set the table with candlesticks, and they had a Chinese dinner for $10 in their home, and she said, that was the best date I've ever had. There was peace. It works. Now, the cool thing is that being successful in that little thing, remember we talked about the condition of your flocks, paying attention to little things? That $10 savings gave them confidence that they could conquer bigger things. We had a similar situation. Annette was driving our 1976 Chevy Nova, and this was about 1983 or 82. And she calls me up at work and she says, is it a bad thing when water is coming out of the tailpipe? Now, I didn't know much, but I knew that wasn't supposed to happen. And it turned out we had a blown head gasket, and it was cost us about $500 to repair the car. Now, at that point in time, we had our budget category set up, and we had an auto account, but we only had about $100 in there. So what's our choice at that point? I didn't have credit cards, so what was I going to do? We needed a car. I worked a mile from home. I rode my bike, so we just parked the car. We started taking money out of other accounts. We had some extra money in clothes. We had some extra money in recreation. We had some extra money in gifts. We put that in there. We were still a little bit short, so we parked the car for a month. We saved the money. A friend who we recruited all kinds of people from our Sunday school class to live in the apartment complex. Anytime there was a vacancy, they came and asked us. So we called it Crestwood Christian Couples Commune. I think we had 9 or 10 couples living there. And anytime the manager had a vacancy, you know, it was always, you got anybody else? You guys pay your rent. So our neighbor, Rick and Jane, they loaned us their second car on the weekend so we'd go to church.
And do our food shopping and run any errands we had to run.
We made it through that. That was a harrowing experience. $500, got the car fixed, drove it for I can't remember how many more years, ended up selling it for about $1,000, and it was all good. But we knew nothing would be impossible. So when you persevere through these financial hard times and you make it, you get this confidence. Now, what was that really? That was God blessing us, God protecting us, the body of Christ providing. That's the way it should work. But we short-circuit God's design when instead of running to Him, we run to the bank. And I just want to challenge us all. He is a good shepherd. He knows well our condition. He's not going to give us anything that's going to hurt us, but He is going to give us things that are going to make us better. And sometimes getting better takes us through some tough times. But we will come out stronger, and He'll get the glory for it. So that's where we want to take you.
Okay, so we want to talk a little bit about our budget book system.
Isn't that sexy? I mean, look at that thing. That is like incredibly high tech.
Okay, we actually do ours on paper the old-fashioned way. We have one shared checking account, and Steve carries an extra register with him and an extra pad of checks.
Kind of like Barney Fife's.
And so he kind of writes down, he records things that he spends, but they always get transferred into my book when we reconcile the budget twice a month. We have
just so you know, guys, it's like accountability. It protects me. It protects us.
Okay. Each of our accounts within, we never look at our checkbook total and say, woohoo, we can go spend money. We don't even think about that checkbook total because really, in reality, that checkbook total is then divided on paper into all these subcategories. So we have to actually go to our budget book to know how much we can spend. How much is in recreation? How much is in clothes? Home repair?
Medical.
We have to go to our budget book to know what's available for spending. Like I said, we reconcile it twice a month. We do it together. Our budget lets us know what we can have. And our first book right here goes into, we're not going to go into all the nitty-gritty details, but this talks about how you actually do what we do, which you don't have to do, you can do your own, and it's available at your library also. So just keep that in mind.
Although we heard one library had a waiting list of 30 people. So.
Right.
All right. So here's, we're going to give you kind of a 30,000-foot view of how you would start if you were budgeting. But I want to just back up. I just had a thought. Thank you. This breaks it down. This is one of our individual sheets. And this is, I can't read, auto. And if you looked on that auto sheet, you would see when we bought gas, you would see when we took the car in to get brakes on it, you'd see all these things. And basically, we deposit money in once every 2 weeks, and then we take money out. It's just like a checkbook register. Oh, wait a second. How many of you don't have a checkbook? Like, do you use credit? Now, I'm not going to ask that. But some people don't know how to balance a checkbook. It's not hard, and it actually is something we need to teach our kids.
Or some people have checks or debit cards, but they don't ever write anything down. And I would just really encourage you, yes, it's a pain in the neck, but what does it take? 10 more seconds? You step off to the side of the register and you write it down.
It's one of those little things that are really building character and building a habit that's a big thing. So we teach our kids to do that. Anyway, so that's the stewardship sheet. And then we have, this is kind of a close-up of it. So, yeah, there was we went to Walmart for gas, put gas in the van, Honda, got gas, deposited money for, we took some scouts on a trip, so we got reimbursed some money for that. We had to put a fuel pump in, that was $644, and a computer, holy cow. Whew, things get expensive, that's bringing back memories. But it's like history, and whenever I go to do our taxes, I've got details that I can't get anywhere. Anyway, we gave you the income outgo sheet, and that's what we're going to do next is we're going to go over just about every category on that sheet, and we're going to show you how we save in advance, how you can use this as a tool to get you down the road to that first step of budgeting. And so this is the sheet we use with anybody we coach. We've got it on our website. And here's how you start. You're never going to get your budget numbers exactly dead right on. I mean, how much did you spend on clothes last year? I don't have a clue. You know, a lot of families, used to buy clothes for back to school, for Easter, and maybe for Christmas. They'd, you know, go shopping. That's what we did when we were kids. You may have different times of year when you spend a lot of money on clothes, but you go in, look at some of your receipts, and then come up with a guesstimate. You're going to fine-tune as you go along, and that's okay. But you need to start somewhere. And the best thing you can do, I could give you numbers. I could say if you earn $80,000, then you should spend no more than 6% on clothes. Well, how much help is that going to be? Get your numbers and guesstimate. Start with a guess and then fine-tune. Another thing is that at the top of the sheet, it has what your income is. And at the bottom of the sheet, it says
total expenses.
Now, watch this. This is something that nobody in our government has figured out how to do. But the income here has to match the outgo here. It can work, though. It really can. I know you don't need to go to Congress and pass a legislation to do this, but you can do it for your family, and you can do something our government hasn't been able to do. They did it in California, though, didn't they? They didn't balance the budget? I thought they did. Okay, so that's the thing. And when you're starting out, if you're feeling like you don't have the cash on hand to start implementing a budget system, liquidate some things. I can't tell you. our old church does a huge rummage sale once a year to raise money for missions trips. And it is the best rummage sale to go to because there's so much stuff. And I looked at Annette and I said to her, you know, the craziest thing about all this is that this is all stuff nobody wanted. They'd all bought and nobody wanted. And there were things with price tags still on it. So all of us usually have things we can liquidate on eBay, Craigslist, garage sales. You make a goal to liquidate some things to start your budget and accumulate some cash. All right, so here we go. We're going to get started. We're going to talk about housing.
Housing is very interesting because a lot of people, homeschoolers aren't as tied into this as the rest of our culture, but for a lot of folks, housing is part of their identity. And what we always say to folks is live in what you can afford. And I know right now there could be several of you, and I don't know, I'm not privy to any specific information, but there could be several of you that are upside down in your houses right now. And there are mortgage, what do you call those? The mortgage reassignment things that can help you renegotiate. They don't want you walking away from your house. And I know they're difficult to navigate, but if you're superbly upside down, I would give it a shot. I would go back to the bank and say, can we renegotiate this loan? I've heard, we have a niece that lives on welfare, and her birth mother is just really pushing her to buy a house. And I said, Emily, you don't need a house right now. You have three little children that are relying on you for their existence. And I said, a house is not just a mortgage payment. It's home repairs, it's utility bills, it's taxes, it's everything. You don't need that right now. Just invest in your children while they're little and don't worry about it. So anybody that tells you you have to own a house or you're throwing your money away, don't necessarily believe them, okay? Renting is okay.
Now, I made this graphic years ago when we wrote an article about is your home your castle? And we got letters from people telling us, I believe it was somebody in California saying, you know, we lived in this house. It was our dream home, but it had turned into a nightmare. The taxes were killing us. My husband was driving more, a greater distance. Gas was killing us. Maintenance was killing us. It took us longer to clean. And the payments were just over our head, and it was really tough. There were nights when neither of us slept. We just were not at peace. We decided to sell the house. We got out of it somehow. And we got a smaller house. And she says, you know what? My life is so much better now. Yes, it's smaller, but I can clean it in 15 minutes. I can spend time with my kids. It doesn't take all day to work on the landscaping. I have peace.
We were speaking at another home school convention, and a woman came up to me and she said, I am really in trouble. She said, we are draining our IRA right now to keep up with our mortgage payments. She said, should I sell the house? I said, yes. Even if you have to take a loss on the house, get out of it. I said, it's just not worth it anymore. It's not. Start over. You know, life and the Lord is about new beginnings. And no house is worth sleepless nights and marital stress and family stress. It's just not worth it. There are other options for housing besides an apartment. Sometimes you can be an apartment manager. And you can get your apartment actually for free by helping to do upkeep on the apartment. Sometimes you can be a caretaker. You can
for an estate.
Somebody you know may have a guest house. You could live in a guest house temporarily. There's other options. You just need to look at what they are. There's I know that right now in our country, there's people that are in generational housing right now. They're combining families, relatives to be able to manage housing fees. And so that might be an option also if you get along with family. It could also be a stress, but, you know, you have to weigh that.
All right. Next category on the sheet is utilities. And there are not huge ways to save. I don't believe that solar is the answer for everybody because it's incredibly expensive, and finding somebody to help you with solar can be rough.
And in California, you guys don't experience a lot of some of the other utility
extreme
issues that maybe other people in the country experience with blizzards and snow and freezing temperatures. And for us, it's boiling heat. But what we tell people around the country is to prepare for your most expensive utility season opposite that season.
You'll find the best deals. If you need a new air conditioner, the time to buy it is not in the summer. The time to buy it is in the winter when the AC companies are really, really slow and they're willing to make a deal with you. Okay? If you have something break down, either a water heater or you know, you got a plumbing problem, all utility house maintenance type stuff, when you hire somebody, if you don't know how to fix it yourself, sit there and watch them fix it. So not only do you get the item fixed, but you get a little education so that you can fix it yourself the next time. When you're doing your utilities, what we do is we know exactly that our electric bill for the year for our house, and it's a 3,500 square foot house, is $1,900 a year. We divide that by 12, and that's how much money we save for electricity. Now, we also have gas, we also have water, and we have trash. So we know exactly what every 2 weeks we need to put aside for our utilities. We do our own SurePay. Now, coming into the summer, that budget account has excess money. It'll have $500 to $800 in it. By the end of the summer, it'll be drained down to about zero, and it works. It's an amazing way, and I don't have to trust the utility company to tell me what I should be paying. We have programmable thermostats in our house. This is a simple, little, inexpensive thing you can buy that can really save you a lot of money. Now, I went one step further, and with my father-in-law, we came up with an engineering system where we put a timer on it, and it's saved us a lot of money because we have two AC units and we have time of use. But there are ways around it. You can also get an energy management system for your home. There's all kinds of new ones coming out that can save you money, but you have to do your research and not just get sold a bill of goods. You have to make sure that it'll work with your lifestyle. But I would say that you can find some ways to really save some money with utilities and also plan ahead by putting aside a little bit of money. If you have the ability, and I don't know what the rules are here, to put in a wood-burning stove or a pellet-burning stove, and having an alternate method of heating or cooling, I would do it. We have a high-efficiency fireplace, and we have gas heat. We have an air conditioning unit, and we also have evaporative cooling. So we are not tied to any one. If one system goes down, we can use the other. And they also, like the wood-burning stove, I get free wood. Whenever somebody cuts down a tree or I have to cut down a tree or whatever, I get the wood, and that heats our house for free.
There's dozens of tips we could go over on utilities, but we just don't have the time today. So I'm going to just real quickly touch on food, and we have a session coming up later on today where we're going to go into that in great detail. I'm just going to give you a couple of principles right now for food that will actually help you start saving right away. The thing to remember is the more you plan, the more you save. So make sure you use a shopping list. We have a free downloadable shopping list on our website at moneysmartfamily.com.
It's also modifiable. It's in Word.
Right.
You can put in the items you want to buy.
And limit your trips to the store. The average person is going to the grocery store 2 to 3 times a week. The grocer is counting on 60% of the items that you put in your cart to be impulse items. They've done studies on this. So the less you shop, the more you save.
So here's the challenge. This week, if you normally go to the grocery store 2 or 3 times a week, this week take half an hour, plan out your meals that you're going to eat for the dinner meals for the week. Go to the grocery store once, no matter what. You've probably got enough food in your pantry to make it if you run out of something. If you do that, we guarantee you you'll save at least 30%, if not 50%, on your weekly groceries. Now, the average family of four is spending between $800 and $1,000 a month on food. Can you imagine what you could do with an extra $400 a month if you got your groceries down? And we aren't talking about clipping coupons, but we will show you some ways in the next session.
We also talk about stocking up on sale items. Know your prices. Plan your menus off of the food ads. Oh, I could go on and on, but that's for later on. So that's all I'm going to say about food for right now, but there's dozens upon dozens of ways to save on your food budget and not live on ramen noodle soup, because that is surely what we don't eat day in and day out.
And that's a copy of our shopping list. Torn off napkins and half pages of loose leaf paper are not shopping lists. We've seen them. We've seen your shopping list left in the cart, and we know what you're doing. No. All right. Oops. Wait a second. This is in... Oh, I have to back up.
Yep.
We didn't make a slide for this one. This is giving. And we put this in. This, boy, we can step on toes, and this is not our intention. The giving is important. A lot of people put charitable giving at the top of their budget. I have to give 10% off the top. This is our conviction, okay? You guys need to be fully convinced in your own mind. I want to share a little scripture with you. God's heart is grace. Joseph and Mary, when Jesus was born, they gave an offering. Do you remember what they gave? After 8 days, it was two turtle doves. Two turtle doves. Let me read something to you. This is out of Leviticus 12, 7 through 8. And if she is not able to bring a lamb, which was the required offering for any child to be born, if she is not able to bring a lamb, then she may bring two turtle doves or two young pigeons. God is not telling us, you need to give this much money because that's what I require. That is not who He is. The poor you will always have with you. Do you see that widow? She put in all she had. It was one copper coin. Yet they gave out of their excess. He is not concerned with the amount. He's concerned with our heart. Okay? Joseph and Mary were poor. They gave to fulfill the law, but they didn't give an exorbitant amount. No. Here's where we come from. When we were coaching a young mom, single mom, she wanted to give to church. She really did. But she was so upside down in her payments to creditors, to her family.
She was on the verge of having her utilities shut off. She didn't know where food money was going to come from for the next week. And we said, Nancy, do not worry about church right now. God has enough money without you. You know, let's get your utility bills paid so you don't get your utilities shut off. Let's go to a food bank to get some food. And let's get you righted. She was upside down. Let's get you right side up for a couple of months. We're not talking about a long-term thing. We're talking about a short-term thing.
I heard a click. I heard somebody turn us off when we said don't give money. I heard it.
So basically what we're saying is, Nancy, temporarily, while we get you in a better place financially, give yourself to the church. How many churches need volunteers? Churches need both. Churches need our free will giving, but they also need volunteers in all of their programs. Nancy couldn't do money. She just couldn't do money at that point in time. And we said, go work in the church nursery for 3 months, a very short period of time. And as soon as she was able, boy, you never saw a more joyful giver than Nancy was. Because she knew she got back up on her feet, right side up.
She paid off her
money. She got organized and prioritized with her money, and she was giving like crazy. And it was awesome to see.
So what we're asking you to do is, if your finances are tight, if you're struggling, prayerfully ask God what it is that He wants you to do with giving. And be fully convinced. Don't do it out of habit. Do it because you're fully convinced, because He's provided, because He has given you that desire. And that's all. And that's where we are. And honestly, giving is not our first category in our budget. Because I seem to read somewhere that if I don't provide for my own family, I'm worse than an unbeliever and I've denied the faith. So I make the first category in my budget housing, and then utilities, and then food. And then giving comes after that. Now, that's my conviction.
But we are not condemning anybody that has a different conviction. All we want to do is just present a different point of view today, so that if any of you are sitting here and you're feeling under the law, under obligation, we can extend some grace for you to think about this a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. That's all we want to do.
And the cool thing is, when you do finances God's way, there will always be an excess. And you'll always be able to give. And, you know, what's cool is when we've been counseling and coaching these families, you know, because Annette is such a smart shopper with food, we don't give money to the people we're coaching, but they'll go home with groceries. And she'll just pull stuff off the shelf, and we'll never notice that it's missing. And that's another way of giving. Okay. All right, auto. We've never had a car payment, don't know what it's like, don't ever want to know what it's like. Never leased a car. I've seen lots of people who have leased cars, and if you're leasing cars, you go ahead and do that, but I'm not going to condemn you, but I've seen some nightmares. But, you know, that's kind of like the policeman thinking that everybody in society is a criminal, because we've seen kind of the dark side of it. But here's what we do. We are always saving, even if it's a dollar a month, for a car replacement. Cars are going to wear out. Cars also, this is kind of crazy, but cars require maintenance. And so like, we save money every month to repair the cars. Now, I know that's kind of crazy because that's what credit cards are for. But no. Look, a car, an average car, 7-year-old car, according to Consumer Reports, is going to be the most expensive year to own a car. And it's going to cost you somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000 a year for maintenance. That includes tires, batteries, water pumps, brakes, those kind of things, if you don't do it yourself. If you do it yourself, you're going to save appreciably more. You're going to spend a lot more time, but if you have the time, that's fine. But set aside some money per car for maintenance. And when the car breaks down, you will at least have some if not all, the money you need to repair it. And it will not be a stressor. And then the second thing is, find a competent mechanic. It doesn't have to be a dealership. It doesn't have to be whatever. But the coolest thing was, we had this mechanic for years, and Annette was driving one day, and the ignition switch on our van broke.
It froze.
She couldn't turn off the van.
I had all five of the kids in the car. I think I had two in car seats, two or three in car seats at the time. And I called up John. Steve was miles away at work. And I said, John, I can't shut off the car. And he's like, did you put it in park? I'm like, yes, I put it in park. I can't shut off the car. He's like, drive over here. He was about a mile from our house at the time. I drove over. He jumped in the car. He goes, you're right. You can't shut off the car. So he drove back home with me. I unloaded all the kids. He took the car back to the shop, and it was a frozen ignition. He had to change the ignition switch. So, but that was just awesome to have a mechanic like that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they're out there. Okay. You can find them.
Okay, two other things I want to share with you. One is, track your gas mileage. If you don't have a gas mileage tracker sheet, we have one free on our website. Just look up gas mileage at moneysmartfamily.com. And there's a free tracker, and I use it all the time. Basically what you do is you put in the number of miles you've driven since the last time you filled up. You divide that by the number of gallons you put in, and that will tell you what your gas mileage is. Now, the reason it's important is because when your gas mileage drops, that's an indication that something is wrong. Either your tires need to be inflated, or you've got a clogged fuel pump, all kinds of things. It can be a kind of a warning light before there's a problem. So just track your gas mileage. That's number one. Number two, this is worth gold right here. 75% of families, when their insurance bill comes, they pay it without ever quoting it. I guarantee you that insurance companies have different rates for different zip codes every year. And here's why. 2 years ago, we had a hailstorm in North Phoenix, North Scottsdale area, and lots of cars were damaged. There were certain insurance companies that were heavily invested in that area. In certain zip codes, their rates went up because they had greater losses. Other insurance companies were not in that area. Their rates went down. I went to a website called InsureMe.com. It's through our website. And you put in your information, and you get quotes from 10 different insurance companies. I got a call from a guy who said, I'm from Liberty Mutual, and I know nobody can beat our prices.
In your zip code?
In your zip code. And we saved $200 a month on insurance. Look, I'm telling you, it didn't change our lifestyle one bit, but we saved money. Quote your insurance every couple of years. You will find the more research you do, the more you save.
Okay, we got to fly. I mean, really fly. So no more stories. I'm just going to go through the notes, okay? Because we got a lot to cover. There's so much stuff I want to share with you guys. Okay, medical. Set aside something each month for your medical expenses. Medical expenses should not be an emergency. Know your medical policy. Everybody should have medical insurance, whether you're on the state medical policy or whether you get your own or whether you have it through work. Everybody should have medical insurance. There's nothing like an emergency appendectomy to cost thousands of dollars, even if you have to have high deductible. Okay, learn basic first aid. Have a medical reference book at home. Ask your doctor for samples when you go in.
And that used to go with a little bag. Talk to the nurse.
Right.
Fill it up with samples.
If you do immunizations and you get charged for them normally, consider a county clinic. They can be free at a county clinic. Just do them when your kids are older. I never did it on my babies. I always waited till they were older. Ask lots of questions. Doctors are not gods. And there are many times people do research about a particular disease or ailment they have, and they can end up knowing more than their doctor. So question your doctor. And if there's a doctor in here, I'm sorry, but I've been there. So wash your hands every time you go to a public place. These are just basic. I've got a whole bunch of basic first aid stuff, but I can't go into a lot of details.
The last one is, if you can do it, get a health savings account. They roll over. They're incredible. You'll save 20 to 30% on your costs. Okay,
fly.
Debt. I got to fly. In our book, we talk about how to get out of debt, and I'm just going to give it to you real quickly. Line up all your creditors, smallest to largest. If you've heard Dave Ramsey talk about it, he calls it the debt snowball. Larry Burkett taught it to both of us because we were both discipled by Larry. generate some excess income, pay the most on the smallest one, pay everybody something, communicate with them religiously, become their friend. Don't hide from them. When you paid off the first one, take the what you were paying on the first one plus the excess, pay it on the second one. Most people can be out of debt in 18 months completely, except for a house. And house, once you learn to do this kind of debt stuff, you will tear into your house and you can pay that off quickly too.
Okay, clothing.
Oh, wait. If you feel like you can't manage this, there is a trustworthy credit counseling firm that we have used. They're nationwide. They're a nonprofit. It's called Consumer Credit Counseling or Money Management International. They take a very small fee, average of about $20 a month. They become your fiduciary agent. You pay them. They pay everybody else. Creditors negotiate with them. They're incredible.
Okay. Clothing. We talked about this earlier today, but consignment shops, thrift stores, like Value Village, Goodwill, DAV, rummage and garage sales, hand-me-downs, clothing should not be a category in your budget that costs you large amounts of money. This was a spot we did on the Today Show. We did a little fashion show, and I found that two-piece turquoise outfit at a consignment store at their $2 sale, and it's lined. $2.
I got my tux for $20.
Okay. So they're out there. You should never have to spend lots of money on clothes. There's tons of resources. Okay, entertainment and recreation. This is one of the most commonly overspent categories in a person's household. I highly recommend, if you struggle with this area, to use an envelope of cash. And when the money is gone, stop spending. Okay, it's a forced stop for you. Like a forced quit on your computer, okay?
Wow.
I got it.
You speak computerese.
I did. Look for free community resources. They are out there, from concerts and sports events at colleges, universities, and high schools. They're everywhere. Think about doing potluck game nights with other families. We have had the most fun doing this. Look at your outdoor activities. You guys live in California. The weather is beautiful here. I mean, you should have bicycles. You should have picnicking. You should have bocce ball, horseshoes.
We list in our book tons of recreational activities to think about. And really, they all came as a result of running a field trip committee for our homeschool group. We did tours to ice factories, dairy farms, you name it, we
cotton
did it.
Gins,
and so now whenever we travel, like we went up to Fallbrook a couple years ago and toured an avocado factory. That was fun. Now, I think here close by is the Taylor Guitar Factory. They give tours. How about Skechers Factory? Do they give tours? I don't know. But those are fun recreational activities.
Right. And if when we go on date nights, we always use 2-for-1 coupons. Some of them get mailed to our box. Sometimes we buy an entertainment book on a discount sale each year. And it was so awesome. For Valentine's Day, we went out the night before. There was nobody out there. We had free movie vouchers that somebody had given us as a gift. We had 2-for-1 at the restaurant. And a lot of times the restaurants won't take coupons on a holiday like Valentine's Day or Mother's Day. And so we went the day before, and it was the most wonderful, peaceful, awesome night.
But the key is, set aside a predetermined amount. When you decide to go out on a date, look at what you have and then make it fit what you have. You'll enjoy it. Okay. Savings. We've got to be saving. Scripture doesn't command you to do it, but it says in the house of the righteous, there is savings. It said it is gold, oil, and all kinds of precious stuff. So what we do is we teach our kids 20%. We set aside money for saving for all kinds of things. We built an emergency fund. It took us 5 years to build, but it covered emergency unemployment, six months' worth of living expenses, emergency travel in case any one of our family members in other cities became sick. We could jump on a plane without worrying about the price. And I based it on all seven of us flying. We had to use it when my mom was dying. And I'll tell you what, in an emotional time, it's wonderful not to have to worry about the money. It really is. We have saving for car replacement. We have house projects. You know that you need to have in savings about 1% of the value of your house for major problems that could happen in case insurance doesn't cover it. 1%. Okay? Think about that. It's important. It took us 5 years to do it. We've got it. And you know what? We've got peace. But build the savings.
Okay. The last thing I think we have time for before we close is kids' activities. And that's a big one for a budget. A lot of times we had to make choices for what our kids were going to get involved in based on our financial situation. So even though Steve was a gymnast in college, that was not in the budget for our kids to be a gymnast because the fees were exorbitant to go do gymnastics. And we just couldn't balance our budget and do it. If you can balance your budget and you want to do it, go for it. But for us, it didn't work. So we chose things like music. The 4-H had a clogging dance club that Abby was part of, and the fees were very minimal. We had one child that did sports, and we started with the YMCA and looked for not those club things where they travel all over the place, but the cheap ones. We did scouts, and we found a troop that had reasonable rates. We had a homeschool drama group that had reasonable rates. So if you look around, the resources are there, and don't be embarrassed about allowing your money, your finances, to dictate what you participate in.
Honestly, is God the one who provides your income? And if he is, go read Proverbs 30, verses 7, 8, and 9, where it says, "Give me neither poverty nor riches, but feed me with the food that's my portion, that I may not be in want and deny thee or steal or have an excess and forget who the Lord is." He's given us food that's our portion. And when we agree with God that that's what he's given us, there'll be peace, there'll be joy, and there won't be the chains like Jacob Marley had. There won't be the sleepless nights like many families that we've heard from have. There will be peace, there will be contentment, there will be confidence. Nothing will be insurmountable when you have a tool to manage what God has given you and you have a faith that he will provide, and he will. He wants to. He loves us.
And without question, all the families that we worked with, when they got to a better place financially, they looked back at their life and they said, I don't know how I ever lived that way. This way is so much more peaceful, so much less stressful. So today I would ask you, choose one thing to work on. Think about considering doing this if you've never done it. You're not going to do it perfectly the first time. There's going to be kinks to work out. But when you do it together, it enriches your marriage, it enriches your family, it enriches your life.